This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
Before we get into this week's episode of Over the Influence, we wanted to give you a heads up because many of the issues we talk about throughout the course of this episode, some people may find triggering. There are multiple references to suicidal thoughts along with heavy drugs use as well. And our guest also makes reference to drink driving. So if you decide this episode isn't for you, we absolutely understand.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hello, I'm Aaron and I live in Bonnie, Scotland. My life used to revolve around alcohol. I went to the local pub every night. All of my friends drank and I couldn't imagine a life without booze. Slowly but surely, time took its toll and I got tired of this life. Sober curious, I took a leap and joined OTI. How my life has changed. I'm now a year and a half sober and loving every minute of it. For me, OTI is a place where we can celebrate the joys of alcohol-free life without any judgment. The most amazing connections and friendships have been made through this community. Come join us and have a good laugh at the same time.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's marvellous to have you listening. Thank you kindly. We will keep, or at least try to, keep the introductions brief today because I've got a feeling that we're just going to chat with today's guest. And I know that there's going to be absolutely flipping loads to talk about. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am 50 years old, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. 5.5 years, alcohol free. It's ace. Wish I'd done it sooner, but I didn't. So c'est la vie. And I used to drink too much, too quickly, far too often. Took a break from alcohol and basically every single aspect of my life changed. It's fab. I don't do it on my own. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world, Ben Anderson.
Hello, I'm Ben, I'm 35, I live in Liverpool, and I haven't used this one for a while. I would say that I didn't have an alcohol problem, in inverted commas, but alcohol caused me problems that aren't there now that I don't drink. I'm nearly 4 years alcohol-free and absolutely love it. Shaz, let's introduce our guest because we've been practicing, haven't we, before we started recording.
Our guest's
name today. So... this is it. Mike's alive now. This is the moment, Sharon. Could you please introduce our guest today, Shaz?
Oh, God. No pressure. No pressure at all. It gives us great pleasure today to welcome Dana White Guerreri from Colorado in the US.
Did you just say perfect?
Thank God for that. Yes, hallelujah.
Before the call, we've been going Guerreri.
Funny story. That's my husband's name. I'm a hyphen. We talked about why I hyphenated. But they used to, when they'd go out to dinner, they would use a random name because no one could ever get Guerreri right. You know, it's just like Guerrero, right? We get Guerrero right, but the IE throws people off. So we'd go out to dinner and they'd say party of five van. And I go, who the hell's Vance? You know, and they're like, no, that's us. I'm like, what? And they're like, we just don't even bother. Just don't even bother with the last name. So,
Sable for Flintstone. Yes, that's us. That's us. Yes.
Dana, we are so easily confused over the influence. So thank you for your patience.
Oh.
It's lovely to meet you because I know, oh my goodness me, I think since, and this is not one word of a lie, since about January, the new year this year, we've been trying to get this pod in the bag. But for one thing and another, we're here now.
And that's all third time's a charm, just like you said. Is that just the Irish who say third time's a charm, or is that a UK thing too?
We say third time lucky,
okay,
which is the same sort of thing. So yeah, absolutely, third time lucky, here you are. Dana, we're chuffed a bit. Thank you so much. And before we get into your story and where you are now, just tell us a little bit about yourself in Colorado. What do you do?
Oh gosh, I'm in Colorado. I am 1,200 days sober from alcohol, 26 months from marijuana. I just turned 48 on the 4th. Dear God, help us. I am married. We've been together 20 years, married almost 11 years. I have a 11-year-old daughter and two angel babies, and I've got a son that is 17 months old.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
So if you see my eye twitching, you'll know, yeah, it's the milking brain, right? They say breastfeeding brain is worse than mothering brain. So we're in good hands here.
Dana, I've got an 18 month old. So I was about to say, yeah, I totally get that eye twitching. And then, but that's not why I'm
no,
not,
man,
I,
no, no,
that we're not for the same reasons.
Oh, I know. And we joke about, you know, what's harder, having a preteen or having a toddler? I mean, it's...
Yeah. Well,
it's mayhem.
I've got
it's
two mayhem. Stepkids as well. So we've got 16, 11, and 18 months in our house. And it's... There's a
so
lot of
So that's why
hormones.
You have the twitch.
Yeah, it's chaos. Absolute chaos.
Yeah.
Daily.
Oh.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah. I
Can
don't
I just,
know
I'm
if
telling
I...
I've got a twitch also. I have twitches also.
You do. You do.
Where are your twitches from?
Age 23, 21, and 16. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
ooh.
Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. Well, if you see, we'll be twitching all over the place. Too bad nobody can see that here.
But genuinely,
but what
Dana,
was you gonna say
I honestly don't think that I would be able to do it all if I was still drinking. Like, genuinely, I really, like, the chaos that it just, having three, you know, it's just, it's all, it's. I wouldn't be able to do it. I seriously wouldn't be able to do it.
And, you know, I think my little guy, baby Q, he's Quentin. I think he came along because I quit, because I had the two losses after my daughter. So he's like a sobriety baby, because they said, you're so old, you know, with, you know, you've had the two losses with your history. There's no way. He was like a 0.005% or something.
Wow.
And I am convinced it was, you know, godsend or kismet or whatever you want to call it. He is a sobriety baby. And my daughter saw a lot. You know, she saw probably too much. And hopefully I won't be having to pay for a psychiatrist down the line from her. I hope that we've figured out that trauma. But she saw a lot while we were using. And so she's extremely advanced for her age. So, you know, we used to do, I don't know, if you know, we're in Colorado. So marijuana is extremely potent over here. And we don't even smoke the flower anymore. We do dabs. So that's a concentrate form that comes out of a glass pipe that's smoked with a torch. And so we used to tell her, because you could get a med card in the States and that, like, your doctor would prescribe marijuana. So we used to call it treatments. And so she'd say, what's that dragon down in the basement? And so she'd tell everybody, oh, my parents are having treatments. And so they thought, you know, they didn't know what was going on. So she knows a lot. I'm hoping that will steer her in the way of sobriety. But I guess that's maybe, and I should probably ask you guys, you know, is that your greatest fear, that your kids will go down the same path that we did?
You know, Shaz, I feel uncomfortable being asked the question. We ask the questions,
yeah,
here.
The
we don't
get.
We
don't. We're both like that.
You know, I think for me, I can say.
Well, just theoretically, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting, because I think my drinking was a binge drinker, Dana. So, you know, I'd go out I wouldn't drink every day, but I'd go out on a Friday night, be like, yeah, Gem, I'll be home by 10, and actually roll through the door at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then wake up the next day and wipe out my weekends. And, you know, I was drinking on stress a lot more, you know, whereas in my 20s I'd drink because it was fun. In my 30s I'd drink because I was stressed. I think it didn't really impact the kids, I don't think. Like, they didn't see it too much. I think the interesting part for me has been, since I've removed alcohol, you know, Millie, who's now 11, because she would have been 7 when I decided to give up drinking, nearly 7, you know, she now is, you know, she said things to me like, you know, I'm never going to drink, you know, I just don't think it's for me. And just really kind of, and I think being alcohol free, and her, I'm hoping that it's, you know, seeing me get up on a Saturday morning and not lie in bed anymore. And, you know, I'm hoping that it's had a positive impact in that way rather than the negative impact. Go on, Shaz, she asked you the question as well. It's not just me in the hot seat here.
I mean, speaking from my own personal experience, my drinking was quite different to Ben's. I became a daily drinker. And it really crept up on me in midlife and bit me on the arse when I'm truly in my 40s. So my children have always known me as a drinker. Do I worry that they'll go down the same route? No, not at all, actually. No, I genuinely don't. They can sort of, the older two that I mentioned at the start of the episode, 23 and 21, that they're not bothered. They rarely, rarely touch it. Youngest, he's on, you know, like teetering now. He's 16, so he's about to discover parties and all the rest of it. But I genuinely don't think they'll go down the same path that I will, because the change in my behaviour, the change in my, life, basically, they've seen that actually you can remove alcohol and live life to the absolute fullest. Dana, tell us more about you. Tell us.
Sorry, I flipped the script there. I'm the quiz master.
Love it.
So, other than my family life, I am head of sales for Recovery Movie Meetups, and it is a cinema therapy program based out of LA. Mr. Ted Perkins, instrumental behind the scenes. He wrote a book called Addicted in Film, and he, while in recovery, he watched 100 films in 100 days, and so he made this program. So what I do is I'm old school sales. I go around and contact people with recovery programs, inpatient, outpatient, sober homes, and get our program into these different organizations. We have an adult and a teen program, and we're launching a mental health program in September. And then aside of that, I have my own company called The Yarn Consolery, which you'll appreciate. It's not about sewing or crochet. It's about spinning a yarn and telling a tale and having a talk. I am a self-coined consoler. I have degrees on my wall, but none of them are in psychology or sobriety. But we work with people and kind of bringing the two sides of the brain together to get through crisis, chemical dependency, and kind of, we like to say, reweave the tapestry of your new life. Because I never thought I'd make it to 48. And if I did, I probably... I know what it would have been, and I'm glad I'm here now. Everything has changed for me, like the two of you. I have become a completely different person. I did have shame around who I once was, but that person has made me who I am today. So that's kind of what I do. I love to go to shows. You know, I'm not a crazy, I am crazy, certifiable, but I'm not into really snow sports, which is strange, I know, in Colorado. I'm more of a boating, sunny kind of gal, but avid book reader. And I've noticed in sobriety, I'm probably more of ambivert. I'm mostly introvert. I thought I was an extrovert, crazy, clowny party girl. But now I think in my old age here and with the kids, I'll stay home and read a good book and get in the bed and just hang about.
Love it.
So that's kind of the down and dirty.
Right. Well, it's amazing to hear where you are now. I just want to pick up on something you said a moment ago. You didn't think that you'd make it to 48. Why? What was going on in your life prior to where you are now?
You know, I have always had a fascination with death. And not that I would have ended my life, but I wouldn't have cared if I passed. So I think I use drugs and alcohol as almost like a passive suicidal technique, going as hard as I could. You know, I was a weekend warrior too, and then that expanded to an all week, right? And I would just go as hard as I could. I've contemplated, you know, ending my life a couple times, but never could go through with it. But I, like I said, I would have been okay with passing. And I think as hard as I was using, and with the fentanyl epidemic, I'm sure it would have got me eventually. You know, I had a couple near-death experiences, and I think that really changed the scope of things. But, you know, I had my first two DUIs when I was 20. So that's 28 years ago.
So just for the purpose of listeners maybe outside of America, just explain what a DUI is.
So it's driving under the influence, and I think they've changed it to the driving with ability impaired, which is a DWAI. So I was in jail and, in detox and on monitoring 28 years ago, and that still did not stop me. I still worked at bars. I still partied all the time. I went for it, and I would stop at nothing. And I mean, all the drugs, everything. I've never put anything in my vein. I can say that's the one thing I have never done, but I have tried everything under the sun. And I just really didn't care if I lived or died, honestly. But now the thought that person's, and maybe this is not to ask the questions to you guys, but that person seems so far away from me now. I don't even really see that person. And, you know, I had to work through a lot of trauma and a lot of mental health issues. And I'm not saying I'm perfect yet. And I'm saying, you know, I don't know if I fully love myself now, but I'm sure as hell getting there.
It's quite difficult to hear you talking about that, Dana, because it's almost like, you know, you talk about recovery movie meetups and 100 movies and 100 dates. It's almost like you're telling me the plot of a movie. You know, you feel, it's really difficult things that you're talking about there, but you are quite detached from it. Do you feel like that? Do you feel like you're talking about your life when you're describing these things?
No, and you know, it's ironic you say that, Ben, because when I got sober, all my trauma started coming up, right? We use drugs and alcohol to press down these emotions, these things we don't want to deal with. And I once told my psychiatry team, I said, you know, I'd rather that this almost be like the movie Everywhere All at Once, where this is a different timeline than my actual reality. Like, I could believe that those things happened to a different person on a different plane of existence than to believe it happened to me. You know, and that sounds wild, right? I mean, even to hear myself say that. But that's why, you know, and I know you both talk about, you know, that's why we recover out loud, because there's going to be someone else out there who was ashamed to say that they thought about death, ashamed to say that, you know, for a long time I'd have seizures and I'd think that I just had dry heaves. You know, the times that I saw the Reaper standing at the door, you know, I'm sure I was close to death. But it was almost a joking manner to look at that. That's what my life was like. But that's helped me get to this point now where I have gratitude for having a roof over my head, for having a fountain on my desk, to being able to meet you two legends. So I've come far from the shame, but it's still cringy to even think of that person. I mean, that's why I will never use again. Because I can't bear to be back where I was, to be that girl. She was a girl because I was still a child. And, you know, in my mind, I didn't mature till I was, my daughter helped me mature. So the last 10 years, I've worked on becoming an adult, honestly.
The timeline thing's interesting. Did you feel that same sense of detachment at the time when you were drinking and using drugs? Was it almost like, because, you know, a lot of people do say that you, when they're using substances, whether that is drugs or alcohol, it's almost like living life on some sort of autopilot.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it's incredible. Drugs and alcohol are great to disassociate, right? It's great to not feel things. And I've got intense emotions, you know, just normally, whether I'm medicated. But I think, and I remember one of my therapists saying, you know, you don't think you used marijuana for fun. She goes, that's the best drug ever to disassociate. And it's a way to get out of this, to not be linked to your soul, to get out of your brain, to just not deal. And I think that's what I liked the best about drugs and alcohol, not just to have a sip here and there, but just the obliteration. I mean, I like the blackouts because, you know, I can't be held responsible for any of those things I did. And again, saying this to you, I feel the little, my body, I'm feeling some tightness in my chest and my stomach's feeling a little tipsy-turvy, but it's my reality. And that's what I hope can, me just speaking my truth will help others speak theirs, in theory.
Are you happy to keep chatting, Dana? Because what we don't want to do is make you feel uncomfortable about anything that you're talking about.
No, I'm up to keep chatting, but I also like to be honest in what I'm feeling, because for a long time I didn't admit that I had feelings. So I like to kind of, as I go through, to kind of remind myself, like, hey, this is, you know, this is real deal stuff.
Yeah.
This is why we drank, to not deal with all this uncomfortableness. But yeah, I'm, like I said to you guys, I'm an open book. I've done podcasts before and I'm ready to expose myself. I think that's part of my healing. And it's also, it helps me heal, but it's my service to other people to be real. So it's not as much of a stigma. I mean, I don't know how it is over there in the UK, but it's still the stigma here in the States. If you can't control your drug use.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Alcohol, drugs. Yeah. It's all your fault. It's your fault. Don't forget to drink responsibly, folks. You know?
Right.
But don't get started on that.
One of the reasons that I think Over the Influence has been so successful as a podcast is because 91% of people, and I get really geeky and boring and I love a stat, and I'm sorry, Dana, but 91% of people listen to podcasts on their own in the UK. So it's headphones in, consume, you know, learn. I don't think people would necessarily, you know, if Over the Influence, if it was a book, you know, are all those people on the train going to be happy to sit there with the book open and see the cover? Whereas actually you put the, no one knows what you're listening to. You know, I'm sure that's one of the reasons that Over the Influence has done so well. I mean, I suppose, you know, yes, there's definitely still a bit of stigma here in the UK. It's changed dramatically since I removed alcohol, and that's less than 4 years ago. Is that same thing happening in the US? Is it getting better?
You know, I think so. Oh, and I was actually speaking with my hubby about it. And, you know, like I said, I'm 48, and I think, you know, back in the day, you didn't talk about mental health issues. You certainly didn't talk about addictions. But now the kids, dare I say, you know, the 20-year-olds, a lot of them aren't drinking. You know, a lot of them are talking about mental health, are talking about suicide, are talking about, you know, sexual abuse. So, I mean, it's becoming mainstream now almost. And I mean, I think I like to say it's revolutionizing. You know, it's a movement now. People are really starting to take a look and say, hey, maybe alcohol will be like cigarettes in another 20 years. You know, when, what do they say? You say, I quit cigarettes. People say, great. You know, I don't do cocaine anymore. Wonderful. You say, I don't drink. They go, oh, well, why not? You can't just have one, or what's wrong with you? Or did you have a problem? Or, you know, it's the one thing that people judge you for not doing. But I think it, you know, Colorado is really, you know, right now they pass bills for using psychedelics for mental health. You know, they've got an open container law. You can walk around with your drink. I mean, there are dispensaries for marijuana on every corner. So I'd like to think that it's getting better, but it's become more rampant for availability.
Shaz, can we talk about that for a minute? Because it's such an alien society for us to even imagine here in the UK. Like, you know, it is, I suppose, a completely different approach to the approach that has been traditionally applied by governments for years and years and years and years. You know, the war on drugs is removing drugs from society. It's, you know, criminalizing drugs. Whereas actually where you are, was Colorado the first state to fully legalize marijuana, for example?
I think it was second. So after California, but for a while people could get med cards. But I think as far as psychedelics and using, you know, different psychedelics for mental health, you know, like ketamine, psilocybin, it's one of the first, if not the first. And we don't necessarily have any like needle parks, but we do have a lot of harm reduction agencies, a lot of different programs where they have naltrexone, you know, to give away at events. So if someone's having an OD from fentanyl or heroin. So it's definitely not the Nancy Reagan of back in the day, but, you know, is it, Are the dispensaries packed? Yes. I mean, they've got people out the door. And a lot of people spend their money on marijuana more so now than alcohol. And I honestly used, to divulge some more shameful things, I used marijuana and pornography to get sober. So I switched my addictions I got off the hard drugs, got off cocaine, got off alcohol, but I was still smoking marijuana, or doing dabs is what we call it. I wasn't just smoking flower. It's the concentrate. So I pretty much used that in pornography to get sober. So I'm straight edge now, you know, I don't use anything. I mean, I've got psychiatry teams that I do. I use Lexapro now for PTSD. And I was using naltrexone for a while for the cravings. But now I'm totally straight edge. So I don't know. Did it help? Do I encourage people to use?
How does it feel to be straight edge? And because for us here, you know, I can leave my front door now and I can get a pint within 5 minutes. You know, that's culturally very accepted, available. marketed, glossy, talking about that for ages. But how does it feel to live in a, you know, to be straight edge, as you describe yourself, living in a society where even more is available to you around the corner? Do you think it's a good thing for somebody who's like, do you think it's a good thing for your society, your community in Colorado? And I understand that you are not the governor of Colorado, but just being as a citizen of.
You know, it's interesting. I actually, I've got a credit down at my favorite dispensary for $100. I could get a nice, you know, I could get some good drugs down the street. But I think it has helped because it is somewhat regulated. So it's not just some rando that grows some weed or gets some weed from wherever, Canada or, you know, Mexico or where, or, you know, flying it in from wherever. And so it is more regulated. The crops that are grown by each dispensary are typically organic. They're more watched. Whereas I think now, I mean, a lot of people, you know, the drugs that you can get on the street will could have fentanyl. Marijuana, not really as much. I don't think anybody would waste, you know, fentanyl on some marijuana. But I, you know, it's hard to say. If I could get rid of everything, you know, if I could get rid of guns and alcohol and drugs, I'd say yes. Will that stop our problems? I don't know. I don't know. And like I said, you know, I've got an 11-year-old and I've got a baby boy growing up, and I've got friends in California who have stock and in, you know, backpacks that have bulletproof backpacks, bulletproof coats, you know, that they are trying to sell. So, you know, it's hard to say if I take away everything, does that help the mental health issue? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Shaz, I'll come to you. It's just, it is mad, isn't it, really, that, you know, we speak the same language, we have McDonald's and we watch Friends, but actually our lives are so different. Our societies are so different. It's just, it's mad to, like, what you just said there about bulletproof backpacks. Like,
right.
This is an alcohol-free right. podcast. I know we talk about alcohol-free live lives. And sorry, Sharon, yeah. We're getting started, but I just find this so...
Carry on.
Interesting.
Right. You know, and how do we, I have a good friend, Jacqueline, she does Doom to Bloom podcast. And we talked about how having all the things in the world helps us to educate our children. And that's really all we can do. If we teach our kids, you know, I'm teaching my 11-year-old daughter. She wants to get a phone. Do I get her a phone? She's on, you know, she's on her tablet. She's on Roblox. You know, she walks to school. A lot of people don't like the fact that she walks to school where, you know, I took her over to a play date last night. And the lady said to me first thing, she was, I just want you to know, we've got no guns. We've got, you know, they're going to play a violent video game. I hope you don't mind. And I said, well, you know, I'm in recovery. So she's seen a lot. Like, she's been to concerts with us and, you know, parties and she's seen some things. And she said, oh, well, do you mind if I have alcohol out? And I said, no, it's fine. But these are the kind of conversations that we're having here in the States. You know, do you mind if I smoke weed in the house with your kid here? You know, I don't really want you to smoke cigarettes around her, but is it okay if you smoke weed in the house? You know, is she going to see it anyway when she goes to a party? What does she see on her tablet that she won't see on her phone? So it's a twisted world we live in. And hopefully, I think, Sharon, you said it perfectly, that by being sober is going to change that landscape for her.
Well, it's ultimately all you can do, isn't it? As her mum, what else can you do other than, as we call it, be the lighthouse, set the example, live the right way?
Right. I mean, do we not, you know, if she wants to go to a party in a couple of years, do I let her? You know, do I, you know, you guys might know the movie, the show. I should probably not even speak of it. Heartbreak High. It's a Netflix show. It's based out of Australia and it's pretty raw. I mean, it's a high school show. They talk about all the stuff and I've been watching it with her. And a lot of people are pissed that I've been letting her watch this raunchy show. But I said, you know, I'd rather talk to her about it and say, this is what they're doing. This is sex. This is a sexual assault. These are drugs. You know, this is bullying. This is non-binary. This is, you know, lesbian relationships. I want to be the one that gives her the information. I don't want her to get it from little Johnny down the block.
I love that. And I love your honesty, Dana. Go on, Ben. You're going to jump in.
Angela loves your honesty as well. One of our community members is watching the call. She's put in the chat box that she loves Recover out loud, and it takes guts to do that. Can I ask you, Dana, what is your message to the world then? Whilst you're recovering out loud, you know, what is your message?
You know, I've got a lot of messages, but I think the so main one... Yeah, I know. And this is why I've been hounding you guys for how long now, Sharon?
Months.
Please be my friend. You know, I think what changes everything for you in recovery is finding a community, is not being alone. And now I love solitude. Like I said, I'll sit in my bed and read a book. I'm totally fine with that. But to find people you can relate to, and find people that I can say, here's the cringiest, you know, you guys haven't even heard my cringiest stories, but here's some crazy things about my crazy brain, certifiable, that I want to tell you. And you'll just nod your head and say, hey, thanks, Dana. Thanks for being honest. You know, or, you know, one of the first times I went to an online group with the I Am Sober app, they do little Zoom calls. And I did, you know, the whole thing, you know, when you first get sober, I'm crying and I'm screaming and I'm being, you know, having a manic episode. And they go, well, thanks, Dana. Will you be back next week? Right. And I said, well, holy shit. Like, I just made a total clown of myself. I'm blubbering. I'm snotting everywhere. And they said, thanks so much. We appreciate that. and that's what's so incredible about this community. I'm going to get weepy now. Here I go. About these communities is that, you know, people love you as you are, and we want to help people, you know, and that's the thing I think that's the biggest part for me is finding community and finding people that love you for who you are. And that's all the dirty, cringy stuff that we want to hide away. And that's what, you know, big pharma, alcohol, the man, they want you to do. They want you to be isolated, and they want you to hate yourself. So you go and buy their stuff to feel better.
Don't dare do I it say. Alone is what you're saying. So, yeah, you know, don't do this on your own. Yeah.
It's at the heart of what we do. It's why we do what we do. We have Zoom calls within our community, and you can be chatting about alcohol-free life, or, I don't know, bird spotting, or taking up a hobby that you've not tried for ages, and somebody bursts into tears and goes, oh, Christ, where did that come from? I'm 30 days sober and I can't stop crying. And we're like, well, we're here for this. Here for this. Don't you worry about it. Crack on. But it's that sense of, it doesn't matter who you are or your background, how bad your drinking was, wherever you land on the very vast scale, you know, of alcohol consumption, it doesn't matter. Once you find your people, that's it. Game changer, isn't it?
Right. And imagine what the world would be if we could just be ourselves. You know, all stretch marks, fat rolls, you know, all my addictions, mental health problems. What would the world be if we could be, I hate to use authentic because people are hating that word now, but to be real.
I'm going to challenge you on that then, Dana, because I've got a quotes board here, as I'm sure you know, and one of my favorite new quotes is from Atticus. I think Atticus is old and Greek. Whatever seed you are, bloom. I love that. I just think it's such a simple, beautiful phrase. But are you saying then that you're all accepting of everyone for everything? Because, you know, one of my dad's favorite jokes is that, you know, I'm going to go on a gap year and you're going to find yourself, what if you find you're a knob, you know, if people are truly being themselves, you know, right. And because surely part of being society is that, you know, we do conform to certain rules and regulations and ways of communicating with each other respectfully and everything else. If everyone was truly being themselves, surely it would just be absolute chaos.
Oh, right. And that's part of sobriety, right? The non-judgment part. I'm trying not to get political here on you guys, but yeah, there's some people I would not want to be in the room with, if you catch my drift. And, you know, there's things that happened in our country that would never have happened in another country, as you guys know. And so no, Ben, I couldn't be okay with that. But I guess
it's a tricky one, isn't it? When you say it like that, because you're right, because being accepting of people and their differences is a massive part of being alcohol free and sobriety, because it's also about that. I truly believe that it's an acceptance of who you are is the starting point. And, you know, I talk about it a lot, that moment where you go, oh God, you know what? I might not like this, but actually, This is going one way for me. And the problem is quite simple. And who was it, Shaz, that said to us, every problem I ever had started with having one beer?
Right.
Oh, was it Drew? Drew the drummer.
Of course it was Drew. Of course it was awesome. Drew in the rock band.
Drew Schaffer.
Drew Schaffer, yeah. But, you know, and there's that kind of acceptance of, and I also think there is, you know, part of that is that, you know, for me personally, I was always all right at rugby, but not the best. I was the vice captain of the house, not the captain. I was, you know, always in the school play, but never the lead man. Drinking, I was really good at, you know, and I think that was a part of wanting to be accepted. You know, oh, this is something that I'm good at. I'm good at this. I'm going off on one now, but you know, if truly it is about acceptance, that's challenging.
Yeah. So no, right. That's just me living in my utopian world. Is if everybody's like me, then we're going to get along just fine. But no, can you imagine a world of all me? That would be terrifying, talking about chaos. And yeah, you know, it's kind of like when you go to a party and they're drinking. How long can you hang?
90 minutes max.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
2 hours at a push.
Yeah. Or, you know,
I think it was a more philosophical
alcohol
question than give me a time.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
even philosophical here today.
Can you have alcohol in your home? My husband still drinks. Now he's a normie, right? He can, you know, have one and be done, but he can binge drink with the best of them. I mean, we can throw down, but he didn't get addicted. His preferred is probably marijuana. He quit that with me. And that one's still probably the hardest for both of us because you don't usually get sloppy, right? You don't black out if you smoke weed. I mean, you might pass out, but you know, you never, what do they say? You never abused your wife or, you know, beat somebody up when you've been stoned. Very rarely, right? It's like a passive drug, but it's still a drug. You know, and so can I be around people who still use? I work with a lot of people who still do, but more so probably what would bother me is if they're in that, like, well, this is how I am. Fuck you. You know, people who do not want to grow and change, that's probably my bind, you know, oh, I'm just going to be an addict. I'm a piece of shit for the rest of my life. Deal with it. Well, then we're probably not going to be able to get on. But there's the judgy part. See, there's the judgy part. So I just totally, it was a hypocritical of what I said before about everybody get along.
Hmm. It's I wasn't expecting the conversation to go this way, Dana. I'm going to be completely honest, but it raises an interesting question. And I think, you know, in terms of, like, we always say as well, you know, yes, it's about community and it's about finding people. It's about, you know, Shaz was like, say, your vibe attracts your tribe. And she puts it in a funny voice.
But you've got to say it in this voice, actually, because it's so true, because your vibe does attract.
Totally.
Your tribe attracts.
But it's also a very personal thing, isn't it? That's what I mean. That's what I'm getting to. It's also very, it's your decision. You've got to do this for you and your reasons.
And so I'm going to ask this, Ben, and again, trying not to wheel us off. So how close is that to forgiveness? Right? Is the judging, does that link into the forgiveness? I judge others because that's, you know, how I was raised. That's, you know, that was our generation, right? That's, we put everybody in boxes and labeled everybody. That's how we grew up. And so that part of me being in recovery is judging others for, you know, that they're not enlightened, you know, that they haven't gotten better, you know, all these things. So is that part of me having the shame of who I was and not forgiving myself, judging others and not letting them find their own way?
Dana, I want to take you back to what you shared earlier on in the episode when you said that, to be honest, you didn't care if you lived or died, basically, to paraphrase what you were sharing. What kept you here then?
You know, I think I know we're not joking about this, but see, this, we always say it's funny, right? It's not really funny, but that's what we say. I think it's, of course, probably my kids, my daughter, because Q hadn't come along yet. But I remember one time we were down in the basement. My husband and I were going for it. I mean, it was a smorgasbord of different substances. And, my nose went green. My eyes started to bulge. And I said, something weird going on in my face. And my hubby says, your fucking nose is green. And that's one of the keys, like, you know, to give the naltrexone if somebody starts, that's like an overdose, right? And at that, I looked at him and I said, you don't think we're going to die here and Felice is going to come down and find us, do you? And I was as we say in the States, dead dick serious. I really thought my daughter was going to find our bodies. And I remember another time before that, I fell out at a concert. I blacked out, fell down in a concert. She was with us at Red Rocks. And I got up, tried to play it off. And she says, "Mommy, what are you doing?" And the security came over because they knew I was off my rocker. We got out. We didn't even get to see the band I wanted to see. My husband carried me out of Red Rocks. And if you know Red Rocks in Colorado, it's pretty precarious to get down. I remember being in the car and I was seizing and I was vomiting. And she was sitting in her car seat. And I said to myself, "You can't die right now. You've got to wait and see." I'm getting, and this is probably 6 years ago. Maybe 6-7 years ago, I remember saying, "You can't die right now because she's in the car. She's right here. You fucking wait till you get home to die." You know, and I'm emotional thinking about it. And I remember but those times I still didn't stop, Chaz. I still didn't stop. And I don't know. I just knew that. You know, what do they say? You are like a candle, right? And if you burn your candle too much, eventually it's going to go out. And every time I'd get so sick and almost die. So I think I knew that the next time it would be it, you know. And I could, you know, there's been times I had a plan in place. I was going to take my life, but I couldn't go through with it. And, you know, we had a house fire and we lived, you know, we've had near death experiences with drugs and alcohol and I've lived. And so for some reason I'm supposed to be here. See, I'm getting verklempt. For some reason, you know, I was raised Catholic. I'm a recovering Catholic in more ways than one. So I don't think, you know, like I said, I've seen the Reaper a couple times and look over my shoulder. What's that black? You know, I've seen the Reaper standing, but I don't know. I don't necessarily, maybe Quentin, you know, maybe my baby boy is the reason why I was supposed to be here. But I just knew that it was coming. It was going to happen, you know, and I didn't want my daughter to find me. I never thought about what it'd be like for her to grow up without a mother, or even if I decided to implement a plan and take my life, or if I let, you know, like I said, the passive suicide and alcohol and drugs take my life. But it just fascinates me that I never got the job done.
Dana, how's your daughter doing now?
She's incredible. You know, she had some darkness during COVID. And she always would say that, you know, "I really like the nice mommy. I like the nice mommy better than the mean mommy." And I thought I was great, man. I thought I was funny. I thought I was Miss, you know, good time gal. And she's doing great. She's, you know, she's in theater. She's in the church. You know, but she's going through puberty and she's got a little brother. You know, so it was just her for 10 years and now she's got this little dude. So, you know, so what's easier, right? The teenager or I could ask Ben, what's easier, the teenager or the toddler?
different challenges.
You know, the thing is, Chaz, is I don't have drugs and alcohol to cover it up. I mean, I've got to be in this. So I can't just go have mommy wine time and, you know, get loaded to not deal with the kids or after the kids go to bed, get hammered, you know, or, you know, smoke weed all day to disassociate. I mean, I've got to deal with this face first, front first, and it's a bitch. Sometimes it's a bitch, but I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a lot better than what I was. I wouldn't give it for anything.
I'm laughing because sometimes it's a bitch. No?
Yeah.
You got a really funny turn of phrase, Dana. It really made me. You talk about really serious things, but you've also made me laugh all the way through this.
Yeah, but then there's a time when they come and they hug you, and she says, "You know, we went out for my birthday," and my hubby's like, "Well, maybe we'll have a date night," you know. And my daughter's like, "You don't want me to come? You don't want me to go get sushi?" And she's like, "You're She's like, Daddy's never not included me before. And so then his mother came over and she said, she goes, you know, Felice feels really bad about this. You know, will you please take her to sushi? And I said, you know, in a couple of years, she's not going to want shit to do with us. So let's go for sushi, you know. So it's those sweet moments, you know, where she wants me to brush her hair or get her ready for her play. You know, she was in Matilda. She was Nigel in Matilda, you know, and she's a triple threat. She can sing. She can dance. She's a bright light. So it's got to be why I got sober for the kids, right? I mean, is that just cliche? That's the most cliche thing you've ever heard, you know? But yeah, they're my why. And my husband, I mean, he's a ride or die. And this guy, you know, a lot of women talk about what pieces of shit their husbands are. I mean, I cannot. He is a knight. So I'm extremely blessed. And I did not see that before. I bitched and moaned and I hated my life and I wanted to die. And I just, that sickens me more than who I was.
Dana, feels like we've been on a roller coaster with you.
Thank you for
this episode.
Should I send you the therapy bill now, or are you going to send me the bill? Yeah, you send me the bill.
We'll send you the bill.
All right.
We're just about out of time. If you could answer this question in less than 60 seconds, you're a good one. Camilla is one of our members watching this, and she says, Dana, when you say you are in recovery, do you mean that you're going to meetings on a regular basis, or is it therapy? How do you define your recovery?
All things, Camilla. I like my therapist. I like my medication for my brain. I have a sobriety coach, Mrs. Lauren Fay. I do meetings. Ola Sober, we absolutely love. I am sober through the glass. So yes, everything all the time. Never stop.
Dana, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Before you go, just give your website a plug and let people know where they can find you if they want to follow you on socials.
Love it. Thank you both so much for having me. Thank you for the free therapy session. I did not know that I was going to do that to you today. I am at the Yarn Consolery. T-H-E-Y-A-R-N Consolery, and that's at the Yarn Consolery on Insta. I'm Dana White Guerreri with a hyphen on Facebook, and that's it. Recovering
Dana
Movie Meetups.
Dana White Guerreri with a hyphen. It's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And over the influence.
Thank you.